and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show where we explore all avenues of transformation and aim to mine a few nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though sometimes it feels counterintuitive, just like the nightingale, a bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and today's show is brought to you in association with NasalGuard, the drug-free nasal gel that uses electrostatic technology to block harmful airborne contaminants. Because it blocks indoor and outdoor allergens, it's great for travellers as well as people with pet allergies. Here's NasalGuard's co-founder and co-inventor, Kanika Vahi, to tell us all about it.
NasalGuard works just as simple as a basic magnet. As you know, like charges repel each other and opposite charges attract each other. Our nasal guard gel is a positively charged gel that attracts negatively charged airborne particles onto the nose, essentially creating an electrostatic barrier and invisible shield prior to inhalation and right around your upper lip and your nostril and nasal area. So it helps block out a lot of the pesky and dirty air particles that you see floating around. It's safe for the entire family, and we pride ourselves in the fact that it works on very simple physics. The majority of particles that are contributing to a lot of the respiratory symptoms are inhaled through the nose rather than the mouth. So while it's not directed or instructed to be applied, or our topical gel is not instructed to be applied around the nose or around the mouth rather, it does have a large contribution of blocking and stopping those particles, the airborne particles, from being inhaled through the nasal passages. The majority of the harmful particles are the reason why, and the reason why people have the majority of the symptoms, such as runny nose or itchy eyes, coughing, sneezing. They're all due to the fact that they are inhaling some of these, either pollen or dust mites, pet dander. Some of the hay fever symptoms are directly correlated with that. We like to think that it's universally beneficial because everyone has a nose, everyone breathes. We do believe that it's universally beneficial across the board. The best selling product so far has been the air travelers segment, followed by the pet lovers. But I will say that there are quite a few school children, parents who buy this for, you know, their entire family. You know, they themselves might be a germaphobe. They would like to pass this on to their kids and make sure they're applying this to help protect themselves and to help block out some of the pesky, dirty airborne particles that are floating around in majority of daycare or schools. We find that a lot of law enforcement, even whether it's a firefighter, some police officers, they are a lot of our repeat customers. Some people who like to garden or tend to a lawn, they've found, you know, major relief and major benefit from the product line because they're able to resume their regular life and daily activities without being bogged down by, you know, sneezing and watery eyes. They are able to enjoy their garden in peace. There are quite a few parents who have given us feedback, even teachers who have found us on social media and talk about their own experiences completely organically. They love to spread awareness that there are measures that you can take that don't involve antihistamines or products like Benadryl. There are options that you can take control of and actually prevent rather than cure. We like to instruct and we like to direct our customers to use common sense. And also, if they're sweating or getting their nose wet or taking a shower or going for a swim, we like to make sure that they understand that it does need to be reapplied as necessary. And that does include when you're going for a swim. And like I said, if you're working out and sweating it off, you typically would have to be reapplying it. Or if you're blowing your nose, you typically would reapply it afterwards. So that is something to keep in mind. It is a water-based gel, all clean ingredients. We'd like to make sure that people understand that there should not be any drug interactions with any prescription medication. It is over-the-counter and there are no active ingredients. But we do want to make sure that customers understand that there is reapplication every 4 to 6 hours or as often as needed. You just need a pin-sized drop I can demo that. It's very easy. You simply take a pin-sized drop, the tiniest amount, and actually for this, less is more. You want to make sure it's an even application around the nostrils and right around the base of the nose and the upper lip, and you're good to go. It's very easy. All of the ingredients are cosmetic grade ingredients, so they're safe to use under or over makeup, and we like to consider it our sunscreen because it's obviously meant to be before exposure to or before entering any sort of environment or polluted area. It has to be applied prior to rather than after the fact. So we consider it our sunscreen.
Kanika Vahi there telling us all about this ingenious product. A little really does go a long way, and it is easy to apply. If you want to try Nasal Guard for yourself, just click on the link on the UK Health Radio homepage for worldwide delivery. Now, before we welcome today's guest back to the show, I just wanted to talk a little bit about what I mean by practical alchemy. And who is this practical alchemist? Well, it's pretty simple. The old alchemists aimed to recreate the workings of nature in the laboratory, to turn base metal into gold, or so we're told. It was a fairly practical process, from what I understand, and so is alchemy today, taking practical steps in line with nature to transform our lives. And so, basically, we can all be practical alchemists, really. I recorded a short video for my new YouTube channel that goes into this in more depth, but our human connection to nature is key, especially these days as we're bombarded by ever-evolving technology. You'll find a link to the video on my website, thepracticalalchemist.uk. It seems clear to me that all this technology is changing us, changing the way we think and behave. But is it actually changing our brains? Well, I'm delighted to welcome back one of the world's foremost experts on brain health, Professor James Goodwin. He joined me to talk about just that. Dr. Goodwin is the Director of Science and Research Impact at the Brain Health Network, and he's author of a fantastic book called Supercharge Your Brain. I asked him whether the digital age that we're living in is changing our brains in any way.
It would be difficult to imagine that the brain would not change when we live in circumstances which make so many demands upon us for which we have to use our brain. The evidence, which I'll get onto shortly, it is there that the brain is changing, and we can go through some of the ways in which those changes happen. But I'd like to start just by reminding the listeners about how complex the brain is, because we tend to think that it keeps us going. We don't think too much about it. So what's packed inside our cranium and all the rest of it? Well, there's an aphorism which was coined which says the brain is the most complex entity in the universe. And I would say that is absolutely true. Evolution has done us proud. It's taken 1.5 million years of constant development for the brain to reach the state that it has, and places us amongst the most sophisticated of all the species in the world, on the planet Earth, if you like. So what's in our brain? 85 billion neurons and 86 billion, an extra billion, of cells which look after it, because they're so important that we have as many cells looking after our brain than are actually working in it. But it's not just the number of cells, it's the connections between them. If you took the connections in an average brain and you put them all end to end from where you are to the surface of the moon, it would go there and back. So you've got 500,000 miles of connections, fibers in the brain. So that's the communication highway, if you like, which it is humming away vibrantly from, as we're talking, from second to second. But it's also not just how many fibers we've got connecting the cells, it's how many connections there are on each cell. The cells which have the most connections control our balance and posture, which is why we can move smoothly and we don't jerk about like a pigeon on a rooftop. Our movement is controlled by superbly engineered interfaces, 200,000 connections per cell in that movement part of the brain. The average, I think, is about 7,000. But here's the thing, they're not static. These connections are made and unmade. And that's how the brain changes in relation to the demands that are coming in on it. It's hugely neuroplastic. So it never ceases to amaze me the extent to which people can suffer brain damage and trauma or injuries, and then the brain, through what we call its neuroplasticity, recovers and gives them, not quite maybe, depending on the extent of the injury, but almost normal function again. And that's just wonderful neuroplasticity. And then what's around us now? Well, an entirely different world to the one in which we evolved. But the brain is so sophisticated and has such capacity that it can cope with it. So the way we live, the way we work, the way we spend our leisure time is nowadays immensely digital. Much of our leisure, people spend their free time on the internet for all kinds of reasons, media, normal media, social media, games, information retrieval, going through search engines. My point is that we've got immense changes in the kinds of information that the brain is looking at compared to what we were when we were hunter-gatherers or even Neolithic farmers following the agricultural revolution. When did secular change really start? When I say secular, I mean changes in society start improving our health and improving our longevity and our brain health. 1750. And we know that because of the Swedish church books, which started to record the date of people's birth and the date in which they died. And that coincided with the benefits of the European Enlightenment and Renaissance. It was free speech. It was the printing press. It was the dispersal of information. It was sanitation, separating clean water from dirty water. It was the redistribution of wealth. All of these things. People say, was it medicine? Well, medicine did help. What medicine does is to cure an individual or a number of diseases in any one person at any one time. So it affects their longevity. But as a population, everyone started to live longer because of these secular changes. It includes things like better food, better clothing, better housing. So society's changed, and we've gone from that enlightenment and that technological, the industrial revolution, to a technological revolution, which was the digital age. And life is now completely different to what it was when I was a child. I grew up in an analog age. JJ, no doubt, you grew up in an analog age.
Yeah.
It was a golden age in many ways. When I started work, I had a photocopier, a telephone, an in-tray and an out-tray. Things still got done. And much of modern life, before we get on to the digital influence, is detrimental to the brain. Constant light and poor sleep. I mean, we live in a 24/7 illuminated environment, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
There's no real night and day any longer. That's detrimental to the brain. Constant eating, snacking, food available. Food was never available like it was 100, 200 years ago. Food now, there's no shortage of it. People can buy and eat and snack constantly every 5 minutes. That's harmful to the body. So a constant couch potato life. I mean, someone said we should be called homo sedens because we sit down all the time. So that. And then on top of that, we've now got this avalanche of digital information all around us. And that's also night and day. And that also has an effect on our bodily cycles and and the cycles in the brain as well. Even the cells of our body have got a clock inside them. And what do we do? We ignore the natural clock of night and day. That's the brain, and that's the changes around us. Now we come on to the digital age. Well, as I mentioned, the older generation grew up in an analog age. The younger generation are called by scientists now and commentators digital natives. So these are people who have been growing up in the last 30 years because we've had the internet for about that length of time. Now, of those, 95% of people have 18 to 30, and even younger children at school, 95% of people have got smartphones, and 45% of them claim that they're online constantly. Now, that's got to have an effect on the brain, because whatever the brain is asked to do, it will find a part of itself to complete that task or to meet that challenge or to deal with that demand. The brain will do it. And some research now has been done. Is it changing our brains? The answer is, the evidence we've got so far shows that it does. Now, one of the main things it does to us psychologically, the internet constantly distracts us. So if you're looking at your digital phone or a computer, people switch every 19 seconds from one thing to another. So looking at one area, it could be health, and they're looking at another, which could be shopping. 19 seconds, JJ. And 75% of all screen content is viewed for less than 1 minute.
I find that statistic really shocking. So it's probably just as well that it's time to take a short break right now. Stand by for more from Dr. James Goodwin right after these messages.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and
cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my special guest today, brain health expert Dr. James Goodwin. Well, if you were paying attention before the break, you will have heard that shocking statistic that 70% of screen content is viewed for less than 1 minute. James went on to elaborate here.
I don't think that's for business. I don't think that's for serious work like academic study. Right. But I think from in people's leisure lives and in their day to day lives, that's probably a fair estimate. Now, that means that we're very, very good at being distracted. Mm. And there's a part of the brain, prefrontal cortex, which is used to concentrate. It's used to keep our eye on long term goals so we can have a profound, deeply demanding task which requires concentration for a long period of time. That's the prefrontal cortex. Well, if you look at people who are to some extent addicted. There's been work done on how many hours you spend on the internet. Those who spend substantial hours on the internet are easily distracted, and that prefrontal cortex reduces in size and volume. So it's thinning out the parts of the brain we're not using, which is to concentrate for long periods of time. These areas of the brain also control impulsivity and control decision-making. So are your decisions measured and considered, or are they made in a flimsy manner, unthinking decision-making? Well, that is more likely to happen if you are spending huge amounts of time on the internet, because it's diminishing those parts of the brain which are profound in the tasks they deal with. So 85% of teachers report that children are increasingly easily distracted.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? It's also been found that those people who are addicted to internet use, and that I can't come up with a criterion for that, but they have an IAT, an internet addictive test. And you can get a score on that, and then they'll put you on the bandwidth where you are in terms of what you're using. They found that people who are constantly distracted and media switching, actually, when it comes to a real task that requires a bit of longer term memory, a bit of concentration, and a bit of attention, they do actually do less well. So a non-internet test of some kind, which involves switching from one thing to another, is done less well by those people who distract it. Are distracted easily by this constant barrage of new information on the internet. That's a wonderful paradox, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
The people are flitting about, can't maintain switching from one serious task to another.
But, you know, it explains a lot, really. I've noticed a lot of changes generally. When I'm out and about, I notice far less ability to focus. I notice people have less patience, just generally, yeah, in their social interactions as well. It must be quite pervasive.
Have you heard of the donut test?
No, tell me.
The donut test is, they get large numbers of, it can be any age, I suppose, but largely children in the tests I've read. And you put a donut in front of them. And they say you can either eat that donut straight away, but if you resist eating the donut, after a specified period of time, we'll give you another one. All the children who fail the donut test and eat the donut straight away are the ones who do least well in life. And it's called deferred gratification. It's one of the biggest skills of success in life, is that you have a long-term goal and you use serious and considered endeavor throughout your life to defer getting a hit or an immediate return in order to achieve success, which inevitably takes a longer period of time. So the donut test and deferred gratification, I think, explains to a degree what you just mentioned to me. There's another aspect as well, which is that people are increasingly spending longer amounts of time on the internet. We know this is a big social trend, especially social media. As a result of that, people are getting less good quality sleep, because it's interfering with their biological rhythms. If you work late into the night and it's variable, so some nights it's, you know, 11, some nights it's 12, some nights it's 1. So maybe some people work into the early hours of the morning, and then it's different the night after that, and then different the night after that. That really interferes with your sleep, because you are stopping and starting the sleep wheels that are turning in your brain. And if you do that, they'll never settle on a rhythm that gives you a good night's sleep. And then you've got all that blue light from the internet going, yeah, into your eyes as well. I've noticed on Amazon now, you can buy anti-blue light reading glasses.
Yes, blue so light blockers. Yes, I have a pair
light
somewhere.
Blockers, thank you. You got it. You can buy those. And one of their claims is that it gives you a good night's sleep. Yes, it will, because if early in the morning, because of the way sunlight hits the atmosphere and is refracted, you absorb blue light into the eye. And then in the evening, it changes across the spectrum, so it's red light. So over millions of years, the brain has worked out this inevitable conclusion: blue light equals wake up, red light equals go asleep. So all those people who are, and I have to admit, I sometimes do it, who are on the internet late at night are filling their eyes and their brain with blue light. And the brain is saying, oh, it's time to wake up. It's time to be alert. It's time to stop thinking about stuff. Then they switch the phone off and your brain is in a high state of dudgeon and
yeah.
You can't sleep well.
Yes. And that's something that I've experienced for myself. And but what I do know, two things. One, I notice that devices now have settings where you can restrict blue light at certain times of the day. I'm sure my phone does have that. And I've noticed on my PC as well, you can set it for, nighttime settings, light settings and daytime light settings, which I'm sure helps. But also what I've done, because I had noticed an issue with sleep, because I do work sometimes quite late. I like to work. I'm a night owl. I'll admit it. And I work better in the evening and going into, way past midnight sometimes. However, what I realized was that being on my phone or my laptop or whatever into the night wasn't giving me a good night's sleep. So what I've now started doing is stopping working at a certain point and reading an actual book before I go to bed.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you the difference that has made my sleep.
Yeah. Less blue light.
Yeah. And I feel so much better for it, much healthier.
Yeah. When I was in the army, we used to have flashlights or torches that you could switch to red light at night to preserve your night vision in the, you've got two kinds of perceiving cells in the brain, rods and cones. Well, at night, there's not enough light for the cones to work well. They distinguish detail, color, movement, and so on. The rods come alight when the light intensity is low. And if you use to read a map, as we used to have to do.
Yes, that's one thing we don't do again. Don't read maps anymore.
Yeah, we don't do that again. But actually, just going sideways for a moment, the army still trains people to use a map and compass. Mm. Why? Because digital will always let you down when you need it the most.
Absolutely, yeah.
As we discovered when we started this recording and my internet was unstable.
Absolutely.
So the same thing there. But the principle is that the digital world is not necessarily good for sleep, and chronic levels of poor sleep over many years will precipitate neurodegeneration. It'll start neurodegeneration. What's neurodegeneration? The chemistry of the nerve cells in the brain starts to fail, and these cells become aged and then atrophy. And all this can be overcome. It's neurodegeneration. You can slow it right down, and you can even reverse it, which is probably beyond the scope of this program. JJ, there's another question, which is, if our brains are changing, is it going to be permanent, and are we going to pass on different brains to the generations in the future?
Good question. Yeah.
Mm. Now, I've thought a lot about that. For permanent change in the brain to be disseminated to the next generation, the genetics of the brain cells have to be changed. That's done in two ways. Either you get a mutation in an existing gene, which confers a benefit so that that stays around and doesn't disappear, or what we call an epigenetic change. So between the genes, which are like beads on a string, you've got segments of our chromosomes, which are influenced by the environment. And that's called epigenetic change. It's chemical processes, for those who need to know, like methylation. Yeah. Now, it never used to be thought that the habits we learned in this life could be passed on to the next generation. It was always thought that the change had to be in the genes. We know that's not true now. We know that if through dint of chemistry or activity or demand, the chromatin, the material between the genes, has changed, that can be passed on as well. Now, evolution is a long, long process. For any change, I think you probably need about 100,000 years for it to be embedded. And the group which normally changes like that and evolves slowly normally has to be isolated so that they're breeding within each other. So two good examples of that are the Ashkenazi Jew community in Europe and the Gypsy community in Europe. That's only two of many distinct groups.
Yeah, yeah. When you say gypsy, you mean the Roma?
The Roma community.
Yeah.
They have evolved slightly differently to everybody else because of their integrity as a community, their isolation from others, and so therefore those changes. And the same with Ashkenazi Jews as well. I mean, there used to be 9 human species. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, Neanderthals were one of them.
Oh well,
I got my biology right.
Oh, if you're talking about Homo sapiens, but. Yeah, very similar to.
There was Homo erectus, and there were 9 human species at one point. Now there's only one, progressing to another through means of digital change may happen, but I think it's a stretch.
Mm.
I think it's a reach to say that. It's one thing for the brain to change because of how you're making it live, right, compared to the brain changing because permanent genetic perturbations, changes have been accrued inside the brain and then they're passed on. Well, there has to be a benefit for that.
Fascinating, isn't it? Well, I think so anyway. We'll have to take a short break right now, though, for more messages. I'll be back with Dr. James Goodwin right after these.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet mixed with water and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colours or preservatives. Just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UKRADIO to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world. And hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're still listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, with my guest today, Dr. James Goodwin. Here's how we carried on our conversation.
At the moment, yes. It seems like the brain's changing, but with no perceptible benefit to us as humans in terms of health and well-being.
What the internet does is to change our psychological or emotional state of arousal. So it gives immediate gratification, like in the donut test, those who went for immediate gratification and, you know, wolfed down the donut did not have the coping skills to do to do better to better in life. In the same way, the internet gives you immediate reward. So dopamine floods the brain, and people have these dopamine moments or dopamine, you know, episodes where they are constantly being rewarded by either an internet game or a search of some kind or on social media with others. Now, the brain is working in a different way if it's being constantly rewarded.
Yes, and that's an addiction, isn't it? Isn't that one of the definitions of addiction?
Yes, it is. And the same path, what I'm about to say is the same pathways in the brain that give addiction to anything else are the same pathways which overuse of the digital world does. Shocking. Yeah. Shocking, that is, isn't it, really?
It is. Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it reminds me of when, in the olden days, when I was still working in news and current affairs in television, as 24-hour news was just coming in the UK, and I was considered to be rather strange because all the news junkies around me in the news world were absolutely delighting in this prospect. And I was the one sitting there saying, why? Why do we need that? We all get our news.
Yes.
Do we really need to have it 24/7? And the answer was, well, but you know, you find stuff out as soon as it happens. But actually, that's not what really goes on, because it's very difficult to maintain a 24-hour news channel. Or was, I mean, it's very different now because we've moved on so far.
Well, it's as much talking about news as news itself,
exactly.
And a lot of the news anyway is. But then this could have happened.
Yeah.
So that's what I call fake news, when it didn't actually happen, but it's on the news because it would have happened.
Or it might happen yet. But that's going off topic slightly. But it's about the addiction, you know, so people became addicted to just that feeling that they were on top of things immediately as soon as things happened. So that's kind of morphed into our current addiction with digital media.
JJ, I think the older generation has done better out of the internet than the younger generation.
Oh, do you?
And I say that because older people grew up in an analog world which maximized the stabilizing activities of the brain. They were not subject to a constant flood of rapidly changing information which demanded their fleeting attention. But now those people who grew up in an analog world are doing well out of the digital world, especially as they get older, because they can find out information about their health very quickly. They're using it to get access to healthcare in a more convenient way. They're using it to alleviate the problems of distance. So family members who are spread, grandchildren and so on. I mean, my two grandchildren are in North America. The only time I see them, apart from, I go over four times a year, but apart from that, it's all a digital. Social isolation, people can overcome that by the media. Yeah. They can overcome their immobility because they can go to places they can't normally go to. And they can use the internet to help them with loneliness. So in many ways, the perfect scenario. Your brain is mature. It's practiced at using a wide range of psychology in order to master the problems of everyday life. And yet, at the same time, it's got the benefits that the digital world can offer. I think it's like anything else. If you use something sensibly, there are benefits. If you don't use it sensibly, then there are going to be some non-benefits, if I can put it like that.
And it's more likely then that a younger generation will fall into the trap of using it as as something that they're addicted to rather than...
I don't think modern generations whose lives are run on the basis of the digital world are going to benefit in the same way that people who can manage without it are. I've talked to my son about the age at which his children should have a phone.
Mm.
And he's talked to his friends about it. And basically he said, up till the age of 12, no devices.
Well, that's probably good because the brain is still forming. Psychology, you know, everything about the child, they say up until about 7, don't they? A child will have developed all kinds of psychological issues or not that will or will not affect them in later years. So I guess up until 12. And I've noticed that I've read recently that some schools are actually considering banning phones in school because, you know, it's just too distracting.
Yeah, there should be no mobile phones in schools. If there's an emergency, the school should set up procedures for that. So parents can ring in and they'll get an answer. So that needs to be thought about. No phone standing on their own taking messages.
Yeah.
And if a child's got a problem, it can disclose that problem or report it, and then the school can deal with their parents. There is no need for children to have mobile phones in schools. Apart from changes to the brain, it exposes them to all kinds of uncontrolled risks, and we know what those are.
Mm. Yeah. So, but then for adults, you would say that it does change our brain, but beyond the addiction issue, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
You can survive and you can do well in the digital world if you balance it.
Yeah.
As far as brain health is concerned,
mm.
as long as you balance it. Your listeners may not know, but the brain is not fully mature until you're about 25. Some people earlier, some people a bit later. When you're born, it's only 80% of the size that it's going to be. So it's got to grow, and then all the connections have got to be made to work. And you need an intensely varied external environment of stimuli of all kinds, and notably human interactions, social interactions, in order to get a fully mature, well-balanced brain. And then, if you like, maybe 10 golden years before the brain actually starts to show signs of slowing down. So you can detect in people's 30s, let's say, brain
matures. That's a bit depressing.
At 35. You can actually, with a very sensitive test, measure changes in reaction speed in the brain. You can actually do that. And then the brain declines from its optimum capacity either quickly or slowly, depending on your lifestyle and on how you live, how you eat, how you exercise, how you sleep, what your social relationships are, what your stress levels are, whether you smoke, whether you drink. All of these things across life, hundreds of them, all determine whether the brain ages well, in other words, ages slowly, or ages badly. And the adverse changes which take place in the brain, which lead to dementia at age 70, 80, and 90, start 30 years, 40 years before. Mm-hmm. So this idea that, oh, I don't need to worry about it until I get older, is a bad idea, and it's fallacious, it's flawed. How we lead our lives doesn't need to be difficult. We don't need to live a monastic existence, you know, with our proverbial hair shirt on and flagellating ourselves. You can lead a marvelously enjoyable life, and it's such a life that will slow down aging in your brain. That's the inspiring thing, I think.
Yeah, I think that, that's certainly something that's very much uppermost in my mind right now is slowing down that deterioration. But I've probably started a bit too late. But anyway, there we go.
Yes.
What can you do? But you know, I'm very aware of what is going on up there in my brain these days, and I am very conscious of making sure that I minimize any further deterioration as far as possible, because I want to keep going until I'm, you know, well over 100. I don't want to be, you know, suddenly stopped short because my brain isn't functioning.
If I can live well until I'm 100, like you, I'll be very happy about it.
Yeah.
The question is its length of life, longevity, yeah, and its quality of life,
yeah,
as well. And I'm lucky. I don't have any chronic long-term illnesses, but many people do. The average,
exactly,
the, yeah, average at 65 is one. So that means some people will have more than one and some people will have nothing, none of them. 75, the number of chronic long-term illnesses, is three. That's the average. So some, again, 75, some people have got more than that, some people have got less than that. At 85, the average is six long-term illnesses. You're talking about obesity, diabetes, COPD, the list goes on. So at 85, six of those and 20 prescriptions a day.
Oh, no, we're, yeah, not having any of that. I'm sorry.
No, can you do something about that? Yes, you can. DNA is not destiny.
Mm.
Right? I have a twin brother. He's got the same DNA as mine. He's just been diagnosed with a, you know, unfortunate illness.
Yeah.
I thought I would be. I would be because say exactly the same DNA, no different, 100% the same. And I thought, no, I'm bang to rights now. You know, I'm going to get a diagnosis. Nope. I'm okay. Forgive it. Why is that? Yeah. He and I have led different lifestyles. That's the difference.
Yeah. Very much so.
And luck. What scientists, JJ, esoterically call stochastic factors.
Oh, right. Is that what they call it?
Luck of the draw. Yeah. I didn't get knocked down, you know, by a rampant cyclist. Do you know what I mean? I had nothing fall on my head. I didn't get all these infectious diseases. You know, I never took any wrong turns in life. I haven't been shot, mugged, injured, or whatever.
Yeah.
Stochastic factors go along. Get luck goes a long way as well.
Well, on that note, thank you so much for talking to us about how our digital age is affecting our brains and how we might just be aware of it. And, you know, take some steps to make sure that we're not affecting our health too much in terms of causing us problems in later life as well. So it may not be causing a problem right now, but it might well do as we get older. So, yeah, thanks so much for coming onto the show and talking about that.
As ever, JJ, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank Brilliant. You. Thank you.
Interesting stuff as ever from Dr. James Goodwin there. The Brain Health Network's website is at brain.health, by the way. Very short and sweet, that's simply brain.health. And that brings us towards the end of today's show. I'm not sure whether I should be encouraging you to spend more time online, but do check out my website, thepracticalalchemist.uk. There's no co in there, it's just .uk. You'll find my blog there and links to all my social media, including YouTube. Some of you will know I do energy clearing, so if you're interested in that, you'll find loads of information at safehavenhealing.uk. That's safehavenhealing.uk. This show was brought to you in association with NasalGuard, the drug-free nasal gel that uses electrostatic technology to block harmful airborne contaminants as well as indoor and outdoor allergens. So perfect for travellers and allergy sufferers alike. Thank you for listening. Join me next time for more Practical Alchemy. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.